Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week with Dr. T, our weekly news program. We're bringing you another exciting episode filled with cutting-edge insights, exclusive membership benefits, and must-know health information. I hope by now you've all joined Tenpenny Prime. If not, now's the perfect time. Our members get access to three new educational programs every month: a topical white paper that comes out on week two, a recorded educational presentation in week three, and live Ask the Expert event on week four. We've already completed two of these. If you've been following us, you'll know that January was thyroid and iodine month, and we welcomed Ask the Expert guest, Dr. Ed Group, into that month. Very, very exciting. The show was fantastic. And then February, which we just completed, was heart month. And we had special guest, none other than Dr. Aseem Malhotra, on our Ask the Expert panel. These are absolutely incredible, information-packed events, and I hope that you were able to attend. And don't forget, all of our podcasts are now available on Rumble, CloudHub, Spotify, and right at drtenpenny.com. This is powerful, uncensored content you can access anytime. Go to the membership tab on shoptenpenny.net and become part of Tenpenny Prime today. We have a great mix of free and membership exclusive content, so you don't want to miss out. Visit shoptenpenny.net and join us now. Now, before we dive into today's topic, I'm excited to welcome our very special guest, our very own Dr. Sherry Tenpenny herself. We'll be discussing her brand new book and the powerful insights she's sharing about health, healing, and what you need to know right now. Stay tuned. We'll be back right after this short break. You won't want to miss this.
Zeolite is a detox spray. We work specifically with a company called Touchstone Essentials. They are an incredible company. We've been working with them now for several years. And zeolite is a mineral that goes through your body like a one-way basket. It will clean out heavy metals such as arsenic and mercury, aluminum, cadmium, and it hooks onto those metals from a one-way perspective. So once it's bound, it goes out through your urine or your stools and doesn't get redeposited in other places. Everybody needs to have a detox product in their life, and this one is so easy to use, and it's so safe. You can take it when you're pregnant, you can take it when you're nursing, you can give it to little children, you can even give it to infants, and quite frankly, I give it to my dog. I actually put a little bit of the zeolite in his water, because until we all stop living in a toxic world, we all need to get some of those extra toxicities out. The heavy metals, the persistent organic pollutants, the things that are floating through the air, the different things that we come in touch within our environment. And we are a big fan of zeolite from Touchstone Essentials. We've been a big, big, big fan of their products for several years.
Go to drtenpenny.com/detox to get your first bottle of zeolite spray for $50 off.
Welcome back. Let me tell you a little bit about this book. Zero Accountability in a Failed System is Dr. Sherry Tenpenny's most definitive work to date, providing a sweeping expose of the corruption entrenched in the medical establishment, pharmaceutical industry, and government. It highlights how these powerful entities have manipulated public trust, prioritized profit over people, and ignored accountability for the harm they've caused. This book empowers readers with knowledge, uncovers long-hidden truths, and provides actionable insights to navigate and challenge a system designed to suppress dissent and maintain control. What are some of the key takeaways for readers? Understanding the systemic corruption that underpins the medical and government systems, the shocking truth about vaccine manufacturers, and the long-term impact of their products on public health. And there's no one better to discuss this than Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, that's for sure. And tools to challenge misinformation, advocate for transparency, and protect themselves and their families. Now, one of the big questions is, how will this book impact readers? Zero Accountability in a Failed System will resonate with those who have long suspected that the systemic corruption in the institutions that claim to protect public health. And this is not just a book of revelations. It's a guide to empowerment. Welcome, Dr. Tenpenny.
Well, good morning, Michelle. This is fun to be a guest on my own show.
I know. You and I were joking about before we started here. I said, do I have to read your bio before you come in here? I was like, if people don't know
who I am by now and they're watching my show, that's pretty sad. Yeah.
So I'm really excited to finally be having this discussion with you, because this has been a long time coming. This is not something that you sat and wrote the last 3 weeks. This is something that you've literally been working on since last year, and it has evolved We started this off as your team, pushing you to talk about your old Foul book. That's how this all really started. We wanted to, you know, and for those who don't know, Foul was a book that you had written in real time back when SARS-CoV-1 was happening. And you first gave me that book to read, Dr. T, in 2020. And I remember reading it thinking you had just written it because it really felt like it was common times. Right now, this was happening. And you shocked me when I learned that that was early 2000s. And here we are, fast forward. It's evolved into such a bigger, magnificent book since then that, you know, we thought this was going to be a, you know, short book, get people out there, get it out, write this, rewrite that in a couple of months. That did not happen. Dr. Tempany, tell me a little bit about that process.
Well, actually, the name of the book was Foul, spelled F-O-W-L, Foul, bird flu, it's not what you think. It was written in 2005 in real time with H5N1. Not with SARS-CoV-1, but with H5N1. Oh. And this came up and you guys started reading it because last summer was when there was a big push about bird flu. And so that book was about bird flu. And the premise of the book was that bird flu was a non sequitur. It was not a big deal virus. But when you took a garden variety influenza virus and you exposed it to dioxin, you made it extremely aggressive and virulent. And I had found maps in that book. When you had the complete overlay of where the outbreaks of H5N1 was in that started in South in Vietnam and Southeast Asia, and I found maps of the exact overlay of where they sprayed most heavily Agent Orange, which is dioxin, and that's where the outbreaks came. And then the outbreaks, when you followed it across the country or across the world, where all the big environmental disasters was where the outbreaks were. So the book was really an environmental book, and it was talking about cleaning up the environment because it was the dirty, filthy garbage stuff that the Yangtze River in China had 100 billion tons of garbage in it, and that was in 2005. Wow. And so it was really about an environmental book, like cleaning up the environment so we can stop these pandemics. Well, since that time, we certainly have a different view of pandemics. Since we had, you know, SARS-CoV-2 and the plandemic that came out in over the last 5 years. But you guys, my team, read this book, Foul, and said, this is amazing. And you wrote this in 2005. And it actually is really pertinent to what was happening last summer, which is when I started this process, about what was coming out about bird flu and the big hype and how they were hyping that all up again. And they said, well, just update the references, take out the stuff about George Bush, change the politics, take that out, just relaunch it. And I said, that's not how a book writes itself. That's not how it's done. They said, oh, yeah, you can just do this. Do it over a couple of weeks. She'll be done with it. Well, actually, it took many, many months and lots of digging and lots of material things. And the premise of the book now is that what happened in 2005 with H5N1, with the bird flu, what happened with the passage of the PREP Act and the horrible stuff about the PREP Act that I found by digging through a bunch of things about the covered injury, the covered injury countermeasure program with the CICP, which is just awful. And then, you know, when they started using adjuvants in flu shots and why. And so things just all kind of, you know, came together with the backdrop of the Foul is sort of the spine of the book, but it just is so much bigger than that. In fact, when I sit down and I've read, I had to reread it now multiple times, as you know, because of the editorial process with our publisher and the last set of edits that came out a couple of weeks ago, because they finalized, I went through it and went, daggone it, this is good stuff. I can't believe I wrote this. It's really good. This is really, really good. And it reads really well. And it's historically accurate. It's historical, tied to the present tense. It's showing what happened in 2005 and how the PREP Act actually came to be. And I dug all that stuff out of the congressional record. So people don't really have access and haven't really read all of that. I dug back through the 2004, 2005 congressional record when all this stuff was happening, and how nefariously the PREP Act got passed. And then how it was not funded. It's still not funded. We don't have an injury compensation table. And all of the people that have been injured by the COVID-19 jabs just got thrown underneath the bus by our government. So it's a pretty comprehensive book about the historical past, talks about bird flu in the past and in the present, all the different times that we've had bird flu pandemics, which there have been quite a few over the years. I tied that together with some history about vaccines and the adjuvants and about present tense bird flu, which is nonsense, and the horrible stuff that our government has done with the COVID-19 jab and with the injury compensation program, which is unfunded.
Dr. Tenpenny, you know, we went, and you know this, we went back and forth with titles for a long time because it was so comprehensive. We said, how the heck are we going to incorporate everything that this is about into a small title? It was really felt impossible. It took us several weeks and a book launch team.
Actually, took us several, longer than that.
Longer than that. And that kind of came with the evolution of the book too, because originally, we were looking at this as a playbook, as a template. It was really, and that's why I mentioned the Fowl book, because when I first read it back then, I thought, OMG, this is what they're doing over and over again. It was literally a template, a playbook for agendas. It's insanity. And so we, back in September, we're looking at this as a template book. And since September till now, it's grown even much more. So let's go and look at that for a second. So the book is called Zero Accountability in a Failed System. Before I get to the subtitle, let's just start with that. How does that, what does that mean to you, Dr. Tenpenny? Zero accountability in a failed system. You're a medical doctor who worked in an ER, who was head of a level 2 trauma center for many years. You came from that system. I mean, looking back and everything that you learned, everything that you went through, and you think to yourself, there is no accountability here? Like, how does this resonate with you?
Well, the zero accountability certainly came out of the COVID-19 era, you know, and unbelievably, it was March 11th of 5 years ago. So we're just a little bit past that. March 11th of 2020 is when the pandemic was declared. So it's been 5 years. It seems like 5 minutes because we're still talking about it. And it's so entrenched into our society and into our language. And so many people have been injured. And there is zero accountability, at least to date, at least from the time of this book is written, to Fauci and Birx and the presidents of Pfizer, Moderna, and J&J. There's no accountability to physicians who wrongly treated patients that would not prescribe ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, that put people on ventilators inappropriately. There's no accountability for the doctors and nurses that scoffed and laughed at patients who said, what about ivermectin? What about high-dose vitamin C? Who literally scoffed at them. And then patients that weren't even treated correctly. And there's no accountability to the healthcare system, no accountability to the government, no accountability to the pharmaceutical industry, and no accountability to all of those people who died or who were injured by COVID, by the COVID jab itself or by medical malpractice because of inappropriate treatment. So that's the failed system part. Like, zero accountability speaks for itself. The failed system is that the entire medical system needs to be overhauled.
And the second part of that, the subtitle of this book, is How Big Pharma Weaponizes Vaccines, Public Health, and the Law. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, they weaponized the vaccines because they co-opted the word vaccine. As you know, if you guys have been following me for a while, you know, they co-opted the word vaccine for the COVID-19 bioweapon jab, because everybody for the last 200 years knows what a vaccine is. And everybody that's pro-vaccine spouts off, they're all safe and effective and harmless and necessary, right? And so then when they co-opted that word and made COVID-19 the injectable deadly bioweapon, when they called it a vaccine inappropriately and illegally, and they broke two of the three rules by the FDA for the emergency use authorization for the EUA to be able to even release it. The two rules that they broke was, number one, there could be no other medication or other possible treatment available, which there was. And the second thing is that the the actual substance that they released, meaning the vaccine, was going to be less deadly and less and more efficacious and more important than the viral infection itself. So when they released the COVID-19 jab, we didn't know how deadly this viral epidemic was going to be. And it turned out that the death rate was like 0.02%. And then the death rate from the jab has been millions and millions of people. They estimate 17 million people worldwide, and more than 2 billion people worldwide have been injured. So they weaponized the word vaccine. The whole thing about public health, and I talk about this in the book in great detail, started in 1990 with the launch of the Healthy People 2020 agenda. And so in 1990, they laid down some rules and some goals, not rules, some goals that they wanted to achieve in terms of public health by 2020. And so each decade they roll out what they're going to do. And now we're on the decade of the decade of 2030, and all the different things that they've weaponized against us, the infringement on our privacy, the snooping questions that they ask in the name of public health, like when people go to the ER, now they ask them, do you feel safe at home? Does anyone in your home have a gun? Has anybody spoke harmfully to you? I mean, when Diane she was here last summer and she ended up in the taking her to the hospital because she had a kidney stone. And in the hospital, they're asking her questions like, do you feel safe in your house? I couldn't believe it. I mean, it's like, you know, she looked at them and looked at me like, what the heck are they asking me that for? Of course I feel safe in my home, you know, and these nosy, snoopy questions, which has all been weaponized by the pharmaceutical industry through these Healthy People 2020 Healthy People rules that I go into great detail in the book about. And then the law, of course, is really the in-depth evaluation that I did about the PrEP Act and how nefarious it is, how it was written in 2005, and only two people in Congress read it before it was passed. And what was interesting when I did my research is that, you know, there were press reports that said after the PrEP Act was passed, and the pharmaceutical that gives the pharmaceutical industry more, even more protection against and coverage against liability than the 1986 Act did. It gives them 100% liability protection against anything that's labeled a covered countermeasure, which could even be a Band-Aid. But for ventilators, for remdesivir, for any of the drugs that they created at the time, you cannot sue them, and they have complete liability protection for that. And then Ted Kennedy, who is, you know, of course, Bobby's uncle, had said at the time, wow, this was a big win for the pharmaceutical industry. And part of something that I learned that I didn't know until I did the research for the book is that Ted Kennedy had gotten together a group of senators and had gone to the president and had said, we've got to change this. This is not right. And that went nowhere. And then he actually introduced a bill to revise or revoke the PrEP Act. And then it wasn't too long after that that Ted Kennedy died. He had a brain tumor and he died. And so it's that whole thing was dropped and nobody knows anything about it. And they've tried twice to introduce bills to get coverage for these people that are harmed by the COVID shots, and it has gotten no traction and gone nowhere. And so the 1.7 million people that have filed VAERS reports, the one of the limitations on it is you have to file a report within a year of your injury. And most people didn't even know at that length of time that they connected the dots between the shot and their injury. And so it's been more than a year, number one. And number two, they filed the report with VAERS, which is the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, instead of with the Countermeasure Injury Compensation Program. So they filed it with the wrong government agency. It would be like you going to the Bureau of Motor Vehicles, where you go to get your driver's license renewed, and you go in there and to buy a plane ticket. They both have to do with travel, but you went to the wrong agency. And so you would go to the DMV, and they would say, well, I'm really sorry, but we don't sell plane tickets here. There's nothing we can do to help you. And so you went to the wrong agency. And so there's a lot more details than that, but that just gives you kind of a high level overview of the entire book of where we where we were, where we've been, and what's going to happen next.
I remember when you first told me about that, Dr. Tambeny, my initial gut punch feeling was all of these people who at least knew to report to VAERS, because we know that's a very small percentage. Doctors, when you and I first started working together back in 2019, we were talking about how there was less than 1% of reports actually being reported for vaccine injury. That may have risen with, you know, more information that came out since this pandemic of the last few years. But even so, I think there's still a very small percentage. I know many people personally here in Canada, even, that had injuries and their doctors refused to report, absolutely refused, actually even yelled at their secretaries for even discussing the situation with the patient at all, and denied all of the injury. And it's shocking, because you have to wonder to yourself, are these people not reading? Do they have a literacy problem? Because all of us saw the Pfizer documents come out, even if they didn't want to listen to you, Dr. Tenpenny, or any of the other doctors who came forward, risking their lives, their livelihoods and reputations to tell the truth. Okay, don't do that. But at least read the documents coming from the horse's mouth, where there's 1,100 side effects written on there. And I chuckled the other day when I saw a fact checker that said, you know, they did not say they were side effects, they're adverse events. Okay. Okay, so that's how we're spinning it now. But now, you know, think about the hundreds of thousands and possibly millions of people who are now injured. How about all those who did not report and all those who did? But the ones who did report to VAERS, they've just been totally sideswiped. They thought they were doing the right thing. They thought they were reporting to the right reporting center. No one told them otherwise all of these years, Dr. T. And now what? Zero accountability. They will not, like, where are they going with that?
Well, I know that I'm really hopeful that, Becerra was the head of HHS for the last 4 years. And Xavier Becerra, and he's the one who signed the documents to start the, when we started the pandemic, you know, back in 2020, he was the one who made the first designation on the PREP Act to activate the PREP Act, to put all the protections in place for everybody. There have been 12 different addendums that have put on that. And the most recent one was either 12 or 13, the 12th or 13th one, I don't remember, but it was the last one that they put on there to continue to keep all of the pharmaceutical industries and all the covered countermeasures, the jabs, the remdesivir, the ventilator nonsense, I mean, all the different things that they did to maintain the liability coverage, even though COVID as an infection, for the most part, is long gone as terms of a pandemic, to keep those protections in place until 2029. Now, I'm hoping that once the dust settles a little bit, now that RFK Jr. is head of HHS, and he's got a massive job, and I'm sure that, you know, his... You know how like Trump had 4 years to set up those 100 executive orders, you know, that he did on the first day. And I still chuckle at the fact that most of the time in the U.S., after there's a new president that comes into place, they will send out the White House will send out a notification. This is what we've done in our first 100 days. And there might be 10 things on there, you know. Well, the Trump administration sent one out that said, this is what we did in the first 100 hours. It was like massive. Well, I'm sure that Bobby has ideas for things that he wants to do inside of HHS, which has all these other divisions. He's got FDA, NIH, CDC. He's got all kinds, USDA. There's all sorts of things. And, you know, I spoke to him briefly right after he was confirmed, and he said, well, it's like drinking from a fire hose around here, which I'm sure it is, because there's so many things that need attention and need to be changed right away. But I'm hoping that somewhere on his list is the PREP Act addendums, because as the new Secretary of HHS, he can go in and say, addendum number 14, this is revoked. And that would mean there would be no further would the pharmaceutical companies have any liability protection under the PREP Act, which would open up the door for lawsuits. And that I'm hoping that that's in the motion somewhere, that that's going to happen so that these people can hold this failed system accountable for what it did to them, how it weaponized an injectable product and has killed so many people and damaged millions more. And so, and that they, right now, even if you had filed with the Covered Countermeasure Program, I think they've only approved some, they've only awarded like 14 people since, I mean, 42 people since 2001. Because wow. The Covered Countermeasure Injury Compensation Program was put into place in 2001 for the smallpox vaccine when they wanted to re-vaccinate the entire country after 9/11. And then they did another little thing, and I think it was 2009 with the H5N1 outbreak that we had. But they have nothing set up for the COVID-19 people. They don't have an injury table, really, that's thorough and covers all the things that are done. They don't. It's not funded. Even if they were to get awarded, their attorney fees are not covered. The maximum amount of compensation they can get for lost time from work is $50,000 a year, and I'm not sure if that's in perpetuity. And the amount of money for a death is less than $300,000. And if you can get any of that. And I think they have compensated one or two deaths, so it looks like the numbers are higher. But the average, what I've understood, and I've talked to the people from REACT 19, we've had, you know, two people on our show from REACT 19, which is a group of injured people who are getting together to try to ferret this out and get compensation. I think that... that they said that the average amount of money of the people who did appropriately file and that they actually even looked at their records, because most of the time they don't, they just set them on a desk somewhere, it's been somewhere like under, it's been under $2,500. Now think about all of those people, all the doctors they've been to, all the tests they've had, all of the things that they've tried, and many of them are injured for life. They're wheelchair bound. They're blind. They've lost their vision. They've lost their hearing. They've lost their balance. They've got POTS syndrome. The list goes on and on and on because, you know, Naomi Wolf's book, The Pfizer Papers, she and her team went through 450,000 pages of paper in order to ferret out what Pfizer knew before the shots even came out. And I always like to remind my listeners that 450,000 page pieces of paper, I mean, to put that into context, if you have a home printer and you go to the store and you buy a ream of paper, there's 500 sheets in that package of paper. Now imagine 90 of those packages sitting on your table. 90. That's 450,000 pages that Naomi Wolf and Amy Kelly and their teams went through. And they said everybody knew. They all knew ahead of time. They all knew this was going to cause harm. They all knew this was going to be damage. They all knew that that was going to be that all these people were going to die. And to put that in perspective, and I talk about this a lot in the book, is that with the swine flu pandemic that I talk about in 1976, when they wanted to vaccinate the entire country, when there were 50 reported deaths, 50 reported deaths, and about 150 cases of Guillain-Barré syndrome, 6 weeks into the program, they stopped the program. Well, here we are 5 years into this. They're still recommending COVID shots for children, for babies. They're still recommending it for teenagers. They're still recommending it for seniors and adults. They have yet to pull this off the market, and they have yet to do anything to compensate the injured parties.
And there's still so many people who are brainwashed, and professionals who are still so brainwashed in it that they cannot see. They will not read. They will refuse to look at research, and they're just dead set on, nope, this is what I know to be true. And they believe it like a religion.
Yeah, and it is a religion.
It is a religion, exactly.
Religion. even though there have been a petition of more than 1,700 scientists and physicians that have signed a petition to remove mRNA vaccination technology globally, that it should not be used in humans, in animals, in our food supply, in anything like that. They're full steam ahead. They're going forward with it.
And then you have poster boys like Peter Hotez, you know, coming over and threatening that he's going to make sure that there is no more vaccine hesitancy. When you have an entire world, Dr. Tenpenny, and I, you know, it's something that I always say to you, Dr. T, is that you've been around for 25 years, but the last 5 years have had such a massive impact on the global scale, because all of these people who believed like a religion in childhood vaccines are now waking up to say, wait a minute, I'm injured. Or I know someone who's injured, or this doesn't make sense, or how do they push this through? Whatever their aha moment was, you've awakened a massive list of people across the world. And, you know, here he comes, you know, Peter Hotez coming over here and saying he's going to try to make sure he gets rid of vaccine hesitation. I mean, how scary is it that there are people out there that still listen to that and believe it to be true, and that they'd have this poster boy still having this conversation? I want to also mention, you mentioned that we had two people on from React 19. I want to mention their names because it's important. People can go back and watch those. They're really good interviews. And it's a good eye-opener to know that these are people out there, real people who are coming to tell their story. And one of them was Jessica Sutta, who is known for her role in the Pussycat Dolls. It's a girl band. And she, you know, she's Hollywood. She comes from a place where everybody was really pushed into it. There was a lot of propaganda in Hollywood. A lot of these you know, so-called celebrities standing up and saying, get your shot. And how dare you read the science? And I saw some of them wearing t-shirts that said something like, vaccines make adults, like ridiculous things like that, all coming from Hollywood. So, you know, the push is real. And when I spoke to her before you interviewed her, one of the things she said to me was, you know, Michelle, I have other friends in the industry who are also injured. I hope I could be the voice that they need, because they're just not willing to come forward and sacrifice themselves, because that's what they would be doing in Hollywood. They'd be sacrificing themselves to come forward and tell the truth about something like this. The other person is Brianne Dressen, and she was the one who was one of the people who were involved in the trials that they pretty much just dumped. You know, if you were injured, there was, you know, watch that interview. Everybody has to, I'll connect it to this one so they can come back and watch that. These are really important interviews.
The name of her book down there too. It was For the Sake of a Shot, I think is the name of.
Her book is Worth a Shot.
Worth a Shot. Yeah, that's what Worth it was. Worth a Shot. It was a very good interview. I interviewed her and her writer.
Yeah, Caroline Power, I believe her name was.
Pulver. P-O-V-E-R. It was really, really interesting. So both of them. And it's interesting that Jessica said that to you about Hollywood, about people that were injured and they weren't going to say anything because they wanted to keep their jobs. I had listened to a part of an interview that Joe Rogan did with J.D. Vance, and that J.D. Vance had said that he had gotten one Moderna shot, never been so sick in his entire life. And he said, I ain't doing any more of that. And then that was when he was a senator. And he said he talked to a lot of his colleagues, his fellow senators, and that many of them had vaccine injuries. And they were not willing to admit it because they didn't want to get labeled anti-vaccine. That's how powerful the pharmaceutical industry is. And, you know, Michelle and I have talked about this before and offline in our business meetings about how that we, you know, I would really like to put forth an effort to get vaccine, to be anti-vax, to be a label that you want to have. Because if you're anti-vax, it means you read, you are a critical thinker, you can evaluate the science, and you want to protect children. Which means the pro-vax people don't read, can't think critically, don't, and they like to harm children. And they, you know, really, when I listen to those
anti-science,
and they're anti-science, exactly. Because when I listen to those Senate hearings with Bobby Kennedy, and I was thinking those people up there are just parroting pharmaceutical nonsense. And now with what what DOGE is discovering and finding out about where those checks are, because it's going to be interesting to see how many senators Pam Bondi ends up going after.
Well, Dr. T, you remember back in 2020, I believe, on the courthouse steps of Jersey, Joe Titan at the time had offered $100,000 for them to come and debate you, and they didn't show up.
Exactly.
So, I mean, this is a prime example of how they don't want to have a debate. They don't want to have a discussion. They just want to continue on this religious streak of believe without seeing, without evidence, without any of it. And you've always been happy to have that discussion if they can bring the evidence. And Dr. T, I mean, up until then, before COVID, all of it started, you had over 40,000 hours behind on your belt of vaccine research, of researching the damages associated with the vaccines. And now I want to say that's probably, 70, 80,000, if not more, because by the time you wrote about the 20 mechanisms of injury in April of 2021, which, by the way, you wrote plenty of which they're now talking about, oh, we just discovered. No, you didn't discover it. I mean, if we knew about it, you knew about it. This is now you're just being caught and catching up with your exposing. But you wrote about a lot of what we are now seeing: the turbo cancers, the infertility, the heart damage, the eye damage, the autoimmune diseases, and all of that. And I remember coming up to that piece, and you said, "I've spent over 4,000 hours just on this alone." So the amount of hours and time that you've dedicated to this field, to this kind of research, is unbelievable. And that's why, Dr. T, everybody always calls you the original OG, the GOAT, because you really are. And standing in my position, I know all the people that call you for resources and who use you as a resource. And I'm so glad that you wrote this book, because even the people who were injured by the COVID shots, a lot of them still did not understand that childhood vaccines were a problem. They were still saying things like, oh, I don't, this is bad, but all the other ones I believe in. And some of our colleagues had said that until you educated them as well. So bravo to you. And this book does include some of that. I want to read some of that off here in for a quick moment, so people understand all that is entailed in this book. This is about 400 pages, this book. This is an absolute necessity for everybody to have in their library. This is not just a book that, hey, yeah, that sounds like a novel idea to get something like that. No, this is a necessary book. Everybody needs to get this book, whether you're just starting or you're really serious about looking at this information. And I'm talking about doctors too. You need to have this book. And Dr. Suzanne Humphreys wrote your foreword, and she was amazed by this. And so I'm going to read this off really, really quickly. Chapter one, same playbook, different era. Chapter two, identifying a problem or creating one. And that's when you get into the global health crises and how they've been leveraged to justify, surveillance and public health measures. Really interesting stuff there. Chapter three, you get into the microbes, flu, and current controversies, which is very interesting. I love your take on that. Chapter four, H5N1, what you need to know. And we talked a little bit about that too, and how, exaggerated public fear to get people to do what they want them to do. Chapter five, perspective on past pandemics. Everybody needs to have that. You need to understand history to know what's to come. History always repeats itself, right, Dr. T? And we've kind of seen that from 2002 to 2020. You go through the swine flu fiasco, 9/11, smallpox scare, which you mentioned here today too. Chapter seven, a new playbook focused on fear and investigates how fear is strategically utilized to drive vaccination campaigns, maintain control over public behavior. We kind of seen that recently with the whole, I don't know if you've seen the campaign, Dr. T, where everybody's like, I have time to have two. And they're advertising for the COVID shot and the flu shot in one. And they probably threw RSV in there too. You talk about bird flu hype, preparation for 2024, looking at the historical and ongoing use of bird flu as a template, which we talked about that again, the whole template part of this book. The scam of the Tamiflu, that is huge, because they're still really pushing the Tamiflu. And a lot of people who are on our team here who understand what we understand, they're still looking at that wondering, hey, what about Tamiflu? So this book is just so comprehensive, like you said. Chapter 10, you go over the vaccine industry. You do a short summary of that very, very big topic, which is very important in this book. influenza vaccines. Like, this book is just so comprehensive. You go over human and animal cell lines, that's in vaccine production, raising ethical and health concerns about their long-term effects. Chapter 13, you go over adjuvants, you break down the adjuvants and vaccines, you analyze their roles, efficacy, and their side effects, which are often dismissed in clinical trials, as we know. How public health became weaponized, tracking, surveillance, global vaccination agendas, the 40-year march, guys, to 2030. Not, this just did not happen. 40-year march, and you go over all of the incremental changes in policy, society, and how it's paved the way to centralize this global health agenda. Then you have sacrifice for the greater good. This really became, you know, when we were looking at the title of this book, that was a big one for us. All the people who were sacrificed for this agenda, and you really dig deep into that, and the vaccine injury and compensation, and what we discussed about, you know, the PrEP Act, VAERS, and their correct reporting center that people weren't using, quarantines, shutdowns. Man, this is a very important book, and I've read it. Our teams read it, and every single time we read it, we've learned something that we didn't learn before. I'm still taking notes. I'm sitting here taking notes in our conversation. It's just, you're such a wealth of information. I feel so grateful to be working with you. I feel grateful to have been a part of this project. I'm very proud of it. I'm very proud of you and everything that you've sacrificed to create this book. And we often say this is the vaccine book that we've been wanting you to write, and that the world has been waiting for. And, you know, I'll share at the end of this some of the testimonials that have come through from your colleagues, from people in our movement, from people who have written books like Naomi Wolf, who's also written one of the testimonials for us. And my goodness, there's just been such an honor to see all the people, you know, David Avocado Wolf, Dr. Joe Latipo, Mickey Willis, the list goes on and on. Dr. Brian Artis, everybody, you know, and when I speak to a lot of people, Dr. T, you know what they say to me time and time again is, I'm here because of Dr. T. I'm where I am today because I learned what she was willing to sacrifice her entire career to say all those years ago. And so thank you.
Well, you're welcome. And what Michelle was reading was kind of the summaries that we put together of each of the chapter. But the one chapter she forgot to mention was the last chapter, which is the Activist Playbook. So this concludes with actionable insights for readers, offering tools and strategies for meaningful change. So even though we, you know, I sort of data dump all this, you know, all this stuff that I think, and people who have read it have said, this just reads like a suspense thriller. It just reads like one thing to another, but it leaves you with a feeling that there's something that can be done about it. And that's what the last chapter is, tying it all together. The Activist Playbook is really so that people can say, fool me once, shame on me, fool me twice. That ain't going to happen. I'm not going to fall for smallpox, monkeypox, bird flu, you know, whatever thing that they think they're going to do again. Because once you see that this is a real template that they have laid out over the last more than 25 years, and that they just recycle it and do it again and again, once you see it, you say never again. And one of the things, I'm really, really proud of this book. It took a lot of work, and I really am proud of the way that it came together. And it's very different than any of the other vaccine books that you've read. Like Paul Thomas's book, really about the vaccine schedule, really goes through each one of the vaccines and talks about it. Turtles All the Way Down goes through each one of the vaccines and talks about it. Suzanne Humphrey's book really focuses on smallpox, polio, and a little bit about measles. This is really puts into perspective kind of all of it. How we got here. How did we get to COVID? How did this happen? It started 20 years ago. And I lay out this whole plan historically. And then I talk a bit about the vaccines and the problems with the vaccines. So I really am hopeful that everybody will like it. Everybody will buy it, because it's, if you've got a cadre of different vaccine books, if you've been in the movement for a while, this is kind of fills in the gap of a lot of things. If you're brand new to the movement and you just, you know, I just got pregnant, now what? Well, this is a good place to kind of start of what they're going to try to do to you. And I also would put in a plug for Turtles All the Way Down if you're a brand new, just pregnant mom. I tell people, I've said this a lot recently, that when you get pregnant, God gives you two gifts. The first gift is you're pregnant and you're going to bring forth a new life and you're going to have everything about pregnancy and about being a parent, whether you're a mother or father. Pregnancy is really important. The second gift is you've got 9 months to get educated. You've got 9 months to ask the questions about, are all these vaccines necessary, even including what about the vitamin K shot? You've got 9 months. Making the decision of whether or not to vaccinate your baby should not be happening when you're in labor. You've had 9 months to do that research. So even if you're brand new to this, now is the time. And I really believe that all of this health freedom movement, all the stuff that we've done with getting people educated about vaccines, with Bobby Kennedy at the head of HHS, and even now President Trump talking about, autism used to be 1 in 10,000. It's now 1 in 22. Something went wrong. We did something horribly wrong. In the last 25 years, when has mainstream media heard the light of day of any of that stuff? And the article I just released a couple of weeks ago on 1 in 174 reasons to question vaccines, and I talk about the cow blood and all that stuff. There's a whole series I'm going to be re-releasing about that because it's getting people's attention now. And when I say 1 in 174, it's because there are 170 that I've discovered. There may be more that aren't even listed. 174 ingredients inside of that vaccine schedule of toxic chemicals and animal cells and mercury and aluminum and all sorts of weird adjuvants that they're creating now. So 1 in 174 is because if you get every dose of every vaccine from birth to 18 years of age, you will have had 174 insults to your immune system.
Dr. T, one of the things that we hear all the time, and a lot of people listening here are facing the same thing when they talk to people who say, well, I had vaccines as a child and I'm perfectly fine. What's your response to that?
Are you? Do you have asthma, allergies, eczema? Maybe your IQ was supposed to be 160 or maybe your IQ was supposed to be 150, which is Mensa genius level, 150. Maybe it's 145. Maybe it's 140. Because Andy Wakefield he gave a really good presentation about how every single vaccine, if you don't have a seizure or something major grand that happens to you, every single one shaves just a little bit off your health, off your IQ, just a little bit, a little bit, a little bit. So when people say, my kids are vaccinated and they're just fine, are they? Are they? Do they have ADD, ADHD? Are they snotty nose kids all the time? Do they have asthma? When they go swim, do they have to use an inhaler? Are they fine?
Yep. And I remember when friends of mine, their children, had seizures after vaccines, and they were basically told by their doctors, "Oh, this is normal. So you think it's normal for children to have seizures?" I had another friend whose child had type 1 diabetes. This is normal. It's a coincidence that they were perfectly fine before they had their shots. It's perfectly normal that children have type 1 diabetes. And they forget to look at the insert where it actually lists it as one of the side effects. Things like that where they're just normalizing it. When I started working at the hospital back in, I think it was 2004, and childhood cancers at the time were up 30%. This should not be normal. And now I learned that they're putting in a stroke unit, Dr. Tenpenny, at the children's hospital, strokes, because now it's normal for children to have strokes. You're very right. And that's a comment that, a lot of us face when we're talking to people and that's a great way for people to look at it. Are you? I love
Are
that.
You sure? Are you sure? Because people don't, if kids have asthma, I was told this was quite a few years ago. A friend of mine had a daughter that was on the swim team. And she said, "Sherry, you just wouldn't believe it. All these kids are lined up on the edge of the pool to dive in, to do, to do whatever, to compete. And along the back wall are all their inhalers." And all of them have their names on, because all of them jump out. The first thing they do after they have to grab their inhalers, or they're on medications, or, you know, so if your child is on any medicine, if they're not, if you go, well, my kids aren't on any medicine, they're just fine. Are they? How many IQ points did they have shaved off? Exactly. You don't know the answer to that. So are they is a good question to ask people. Are you sure? You know, because people don't relate eczema to vaccines, or asthma to vaccines, or ADHD, insulin-dependent diabetes, like you mentioned, cancer. They don't think about it. But once you read this book and you see the playbook that they have done, and this only goes back to like the early 1900s. I mean, and the main core of the book starts in about 2005. Think about the 200 years before that. I mean, I'm hoping that we are now in a position globally and in this country, when Bobby Kennedy says we are going to look at every single possible cause for chronic disease, no stone will remain unturned. So we're talking about food additives. We're talking about vaccines in our food. We're talking about vaccines in our humans. We're talking about chemtrails. We're talking about everything. When he said yesterday or a couple days ago, I heard him give a welcome speech to the people at the HHS. And he said, no stone will be left unturned. And I believe him. Bobby is really super smart. If he doesn't have a photographic memory, it's really close to that, because he's really, really smart. And he remembers all kinds of things. And if we've got food people that have been, you know, screaming forever, like Zen Honeycutt has been, you know, Moms Across America that has been fighting so hard about glyphosate in our food. And we have other people that have been talking about fluoride in the water that we now are starting to see. Yes, it does cause brain damage in children. How many decades have we had brain-damaged children from fluoride? You know, that your dentist wants to put fluoride on your teeth, or you're drinking fluoride in the water, it's in your toothpaste. You know, all of these things that are making us chronically ill. And it's interesting, because when I did that interview for our membership, for the 10 Penny Prime members with Dr. Asim Malhotra, and he's in our circles, and he knows Bobby also, like I've known Bobby for probably 2 decades. And I said, you know, he's putting a lot of focus on children, because children kind of get the hook from everybody. You know, most people are like, I do anything for my kids. So it's like it really hooks them about kids when he talks about there's no such thing as a Democratic or a Republican child. There are children. He's right. But I said to a Dr. Asim, I said, but, you know, the one thing is, if we've got, you know, is the 67% of adults that are morbidly obese and have, you know, metabolic syndrome, and they have hypertension and heart disease and diabetes and insulin-dependent and non-insulin-dependent diabetes and all kinds, a whole raft of autoimmune diseases, it's not just the kids. And yes, we have to look at the kids. And I said to Bobby early on, I said, if you don't tear apart that vaccine schedule, making that pediatric schedule where they want children to have 32 vaccines by 2 years of age now, if we don't stop that, then making America healthy again is never going to become a reality, because those children's immune systems, GI systems, central nervous systems have been destroyed before they ever sit down to have their first food additive laden meal. And we've got to look at that, because we all have seen unvaccinated healthy kids. I mean, they're these babies, the unvaccinated babies, they're bright, they're acquisitive, they're ahead of the curve on their milestones. They don't get ear infections. They're not sick. And people will look at this little child and go, wow, look at that baby. He's like a genius. He's just like amazing. And I always say to those parents, you know, your child may be a genius, and every child to every parent is amazing. But actually, he's normal. That's what all the kids should look like if they were unvaccinated. And I'm hoping that maybe now, and it's not going to happen overnight, it's going to be a journey, and it's going to be a hard one, because the pharmaceutical industry is going to fight back. And I'm hoping that this book about zero accountability will be able to put tools into your hand for us to stay in the forefoot, put the pressure on, and we in the end will win.
Dr. T, I think this book needs to be a textbook. And I think that we need to call every homeschool or awake academy across the country, not just your country, my country, everyone's country. This needs to be taught to our children so that when they grow up, they are not going to be masked. They are not going to be have the wool pulled over their eyes. They're going to be able to see with the eyes God gave them, because they already learned it from childhood, and fight back against the indoctrination that is happening in the school systems now. You know, or at least if your kids can learn it from you, if they can learn it at home, even if they do go to public schools or Catholic schools or whatever it is that they are involved in, the education needs to come from home at least. So grab this book. This book is an absolute important, necessary piece in your library that you need to read. And Dr. Tempany was right. It does read through like you're reading a novel, like a suspense novel. And every single person on our team who's read it has said the exact same thing, that they cannot put this down because it just flows one into the next. And Dr. T, you mentioned about the what's coming through that needle. If people really knew, they would never, ever, ever do it again. You know, like some of our friends call themselves ex-vaxxers because they were parents who didn't know better and who fell into the trap and did it and learned the hard way. Let's make sure there are no more ex-vaxxers in the world. We want people to be awake and aware and unharmed as they should be. These babies are born perfect. They should not be destroyed. Dr. T, I can sit here all day long and talk about this book. I'm going to let people go and read it themselves. So make sure you head over to drtenpenny.com. In our education section, you will find our eBooks in there. We want you to have the hard copy of this book. Make sure that you pick up a hard copy of Zero Accountability in a Failed System from Dr. T. This is the most magnificent book, the most important book of 2025. And you'll be hearing a lot more about this, I'm sure, as everyone in our circles picks it up and starts to talk about this. And I'm going to close this with why this book matters right now. You know, with the recent events like the resurgence of Maha movement, revelations brought forth by figures like RFK Jr., as Dr. Tenpenny mentioned, and a growing public awareness of the deep state's operations, Zero Accountability stands as a timely and essential contribution. This book not only documents the failures of the system, but also highlights the collective awakening happening worldwide, a movement toward reclaiming health, autonomy, and the truth. And like Dr. Tempany closes all of her shows, I'm going to close the same way for my dear friend here with Romans 12:12. Rejoice in hope, be patient in trouble, and be persistent in prayer. Thank you all for joining us here today. We hope you'll be sharing pictures of yourself with Dr. Tempany's new book all over Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, and share and tag us. We'd love to see it. With a big, big kiss and big hug and a warm heart to all of you. Thank you for following us and being a part of our journey. Dr. Tenpenny, God bless you. And thank you so much.
Thank you.